Blog Talk Radio.
On a man-made lake, there's a sheet up in ice. We're unskilled skaters, cut figure eight twice. At 16, uncut, direct from the coast. Head on assault, the result, death by the boat. In the vote, it spoke about the average lost permission that was seen by a king in a prophetic vision. Like a plane crash from a bomb blast. Special broadcast, slot time with Comcast. They kept the jury quiet and now the riot performed. While satanic man now hanging his dorm. I swing on you fake radio personalities with Wuxia ratings. With hikes behind casualties of fire shots. With low pressure water gunplay. Instantly slap your five like it's Palm Sunday. I fashioned the first tools from the elements the earth used and built it to a complex network of communication. You're up against a hopeless situation. I screen every vehicle through enemy observation. Swarming unpredictably, we spread terror. Increase the fog significantly, change the era. Check my wind pattern, it's heading west. Success is freedom, but failure can mean death. Human sweat and aim shovels. Dig up debris and rubble. Permanent damage caused by the double. You, now who, cowardly urge you to merge through and think the workers to serve you? The Sonic Marvel, who just dropped the next novel. Worldwide, rapidly, more than Marvel. It's a countless amount of MCs I saved, and them same niggas wanna swindle those gifts I gave.
Moments most sacred. Both species, they lay naked in the tombs of the oasis. Think back on niggas I ate with, spend the day with. Guns we play with, niggas I relate with. We broke bread, I heard through a vine. Niggas work for the feds, sent out secretly to take my head. I laid back and meditate to the words they said. Skipped town for a month in group of dread. Had a friend tell my family I was dead. Return at the last fall of the autumn leaves. Operate the plan accordingly. In case the feds are recording me. Sign all documents. Using forgery, cause just a mere thought of me. I'm like Solomon, spoke bluntly. Told the world I'm black and comely. Howled from the grave, hunt me. The smell of death upon me. I dwell in the hills like Gandhi. Been in the presence of mad peasants and old kings who sold everything on the quest for God's divine. Slept in caves to get a clear mind. Who prayed three times when the moon lit and when the sun rise. I met dwellers in the desert. Talked to shepherds. Been in the mouth of many leopards. Felt the death kiss of Satan's mistress. Walked through vacant districts. Performed religious. Studied pagan scriptures. Through philosophers and physicians on a cure mission. Who hardened their hearts toward the weak, sick, and afflicted. Candles lit. Gambled with a bitch. Who made me love her when I touch her. Saw paws, high claws. Bees with sweet honey in their mouth. Have bitter stingers at their tail. Walked through the chambers of death. Take a hold on to hell. Embracing her was like embracing the third well.
Important guest tonight. I call him important. He's like the president
As a matter of fact, his whole crew, him, Baba Dawood Mbwele, and Guy Sims, and Brian McGee. These guys have been putting in work for years. Brother Man Comics have influenced a lot of individuals in the early 90s, including myself. I'm one of the people that was influenced by their work. There's so much I can say about these guys, but of course I'm going to let them do all the talking about who they are and what they bring to the table and why they've sustained in this industry as long as they have. But, you know, they've been around since the 90s, like I said, early 90s. You know, they're a critically acclaimed comic book company, the dictator of discipline. You know, I can't wait to get these guys on the line and just get more out of them, see what's going on. I know there's several of you out there that are doing comic books that want to get that same information, hoping that you could sustain in this industry as long as they have. In the meantime, I would like for everyone to hold on, and let's get these brothers on. Greetings, greetings.
Thanks.
You
hear me?
Oh, how you doing, brother?
Yeah, good. Yeah, Brian, he said. Brian
could make it.
Welcome back. The final day of competition.
Hello?
And Brian said,
hello?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we thought we had to enter the pin. It didn't ask for a pin.
Oh, he needs to enter his pin.
He said it didn't ask him for one either. It didn't ask me for one. Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
Okay, you got it popped on there.
Yeah, what's up, y'all? No pain.
Hey, now who am I talking with here so I can get all the voices together here? I know Dawood's voice. Brian, you on the line?
Yes, sir. This is Brian McGee.
Okay, I got your voice. Guy Sims.
Yeah. I don't know if Guy called in yet.
Your phone is kind of static. Brian is. Not Brian, but Guy. But I know who's who now. We're good. So how are you brothers doing tonight?
Everything's good. You know,
good.
Just working hard, enjoying life.
Right. Well, I'm glad you all were able to come on my show this evening. You know, it seems like we've been working at it for a couple of weeks to get you on here.
Yeah, are we?
But
yeah,
thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us on.
Hey, I'm glad you guys were made it. But we're going to go into a few questions here because I know there's a lot of individuals that want to know, you know, the deal and, you know, what's going on and who's who. First off, Brian, when did you come on to the team? Of the Brother Man Comics.
I'm the new guy. I came on. I met Dawood in 2004, having been a fan of Brother Man Comics myself for about 12 years at that point. And you know, I discovered the property back when I was just starting out my career, and you know, as a professional, I was in toy design at the time, and I had the prospect of working for Disney on the horizon at that point. And I thought, like, you know, the things that I had gained or learned from just reading the pages of Brother Man Comics, this is something that I wanted to take to the majors. This is something that I wanted to sort of express in myself, because when I looked at the pages, I felt like, okay, this is something that I would like to express, and this is
right.
This represents me. This represents where I come from and my culture, and you know, we didn't meet until more than a decade later, but all the experiences and all the conversations that I had with the other fans over the years, I relayed to him at that time. And you know, I told him, I mean, I wasn't sure if he was aware or not how much of an impression the book had made, but on others and myself as well. But I felt that this is something that its time hadn't come yet. It wasn't finished, you know, and mm-hmm. and that it had to come back. It had to be completed, at least, you know, put more work into it. And I volunteered my skill as a draftsman, as an artist, as a colorist, in any capacity, whatever. I'll endeavor with him to make that come to fruition. And
okay. Well, I know that.
And that was
your colors. You know, it's like fitting for the Brother Man comic. It's like perfect. You know, it's like Dawood, his artwork mixed with your colors. It's like the perfect match.
It's something that we had discussed over a long period of time. You know, it's not just something that I just threw down one day and I was like, okay, that's it. This was after multiple iterations and conversations. It was an evolution, and it came about naturally. You know, but it wasn't overnight. You know, thank you, though. I appreciate you.
Now, Dawood and God, this is for both of you guys. You know, who were your earliest inspirations? Who, you know, and your present influences? Who inspired you to get into doing comics?
Guy, you on?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear now.
Okay, good. Well, I don't think I have any comic book influences. I think as a writer, you know, there's just a number of artists, authors that I really liked, and I tried to emulate their particular styles. And when we finally got together to work on the book, I just kind of took those stylings and brought it to the comic book genre. I grew up with artists like Richard Wright and, you know, James Baldwin and Langston Hughes. And I always wanted to just write. I wanted to write like those individuals. And, you know, today, you know, I Elin Harris and there's a British author that I'm really really liking, Yvette Edwards. You know, those are the people that when I read them, I try to see how they do things, and kind of like how artists do. They see other artists and they want to see how they can incorporate that into their craft. I do the same thing. So there's no particular comic book or comic book style. That wasn't my thing growing up. But the writing part was my thing. You know, the poetry, the playwriting, the short fiction. That was my whole background.
Well, it's amazing that you mentioned that, because you don't hear too many brothers, you know, that talk about, you know, that being their influence as far as writing is concerned. Most, you know, are into, you know, different science fiction, you know, shows that's been out, like Star Trek,
right.
You know, Twilight Zone, different stories like that, and certain comic book writers themselves. That's deep that you speak on Langston Hughes, because not too many people really are up on Langston Hughes and Baldwin.
I think when people read our books, I think if they look, they can see all that in how, you know, the wording and the stories are kind of crafted. I think they can see it if that's what they're looking for. If they, you know.
Right, right. Now, Dawood, what influenced you as far as your art style? You know, it's like, it's East Coast, obviously. It's, to me, it's kind of like a old-school graffiti style art, but it's modern, if you kind of get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Am I coming through? Okay, cool. Yeah, well, I think there were so many different inspirations and so many different levels, or I say periods in my life, that you know how on your journey in life, you know, at one point you're into this, so you pick up on that. Then at some point you're into this, you pick up on that. And then through that journey, you start finding yourself through the amalgamation of all of those things that you've come across. And, you know, because at one point, you know, growing up, you know, I was influenced by Overton Lloyd, like a lot of us young brothers were, you know, because he was the brother that was out there doing the Parliament Funkadelic era, you know, Sir Nose, Deepwater Funk, and, And right. You know, to me, I was like first time really seeing like characters that really look black.
Like us,
and,
right?
You know, I had my and I had my share of comic books, but you know, that was a whole nother story in terms of how the comics influenced me at a very early age. But I also destroyed a lot of my comic books in the fire when my dad had it going one night, mainly because of the images of the black characters in the stories. You know, when I sat down with my father and he broke down a lot of the imagery in the comic and Black Elf, and he didn't tell me to burn it. It's just, you know, at that young stage in my life, I just felt like, why am I investing my money into something that, you know, that's not good for me, you know? And that was my knee-jerk reaction at the time, but I think it was also very instrumental because I felt like the burning of the comics was basically like releasing the grip that the industry had on my mind, which is why I don't have an affinity right. to the industry. I can respect it. I can respect what they do, but, you know, I'm not diehard. Like, I'm going to argue with you over their character. You know,
right. You know what I mean? See a lot of that on Facebook.
Exactly. So why would I argue with another brother where neither one of us have a stake in it? You know, we can discuss it, but, you know, I'm not going to get all emotional about it. But I think part of that is because some people have this affinity to these things that really don't care about their existence and their image. But because they have money, they have influence, and a lot of people succumb to that power. But to me, I burning those books at that age, I think I was like seventh grade, they no longer had an influence on me. And at that point, my oldest brother came home from Howard and brought me Grandmaster Flash Super Rapping. And I remember that was my first rap record. And this was like 78, 79, something like that. And I remember that, so that propelled me into a whole nother realm of thought, you know, because that was like the beginning of that hip hop era, you know, Treacherous
right.
3, Funky 4 plus One More, Disco 4. So, you know, I was getting into the DJing and all that stuff. So even though I wasn't into comics per se, I was still making comics in high school, but they starred my friends. So I wasn't drawing from the Marvel comic perspective. Really, Brother Man goes back years. You know, all my friends from high school, they remember, you know, when I was making up comics that didn't exist during that time. We just, you know, me and my friends, we used to sit in our own circles and make our own comics that starred us. So a lot of my influence, even though I could mention some famous people or things like that, the majority of the influence was really from my friends, people who people don't know. When I started airbrushing throughout the 80s at the mall in Philly, I was meeting all the graffiti writers all over the city. So I had like a citywide rep and got respect from a lot of people whose reputation preceded me. Cause, you know, I didn't know who these writers were personally. I just see their names on the trains and the trolley and all that. Next thing you know, I'm like talking to them at the mall and they're admiring my work, you know,
right.
And so that did something for me at 19, 20 years old, 21 years old, because as an artist, a lot of times we're in our space and we don't really think about ourselves as powerful, you know, because
right.
our revolutionary work is quiet. Nobody's
True.
Cheering us on, you know, the girls ain't running all up on you. Yeah, maybe some dudes, yeah, but for the most part, you're in your quiet space until you release your work, and then that's when the noise starts. So that's why it's a challenge for a lot of artists, because it takes discipline, and some people, I got to go out and party. I don't want to stay home and just draw.
Right, right.
So that's why I said during that time, those people were my inspirations, and then that kind of evolved into eventually becoming the project that we're working on now. So it was kind of like just a natural, gradual progression.
Oh, okay. Now tell me the premise behind, you know, the characters of the Disciple of Discipline. You know, I know now the start of Brother Man was you, Guy Sims, and I think your other brother, right?
Yeah,
Jason. Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
Jason.
Well, Guy, I can break down the character.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, people aren't familiar.
you know, everything takes place in the city we created called Big City, and it's a massive, and I hate to use the word metropolis, but I think people understand what I'm saying.
Right.
It's a massive city, you know, and it does have that East Coast feel because that's where we're from, and people sometimes say, is it this city, that city? There's elements of places that we've all been in, but it's also a place where we have the ability to create what we want to have in that particular city. But in the city, you know, the main characters are Antonio Valor, who also is a brother man when he puts on his costume, and he's a public attorney. There's Duke Denham, who is his supervisor. He's the district attorney for the city of Big City. And then rounding out, you have Melody Rich, and she's also a public attorney, but she's not from the city. She's from the suburbs, but she works in the city. So you have those three personalities on one plane, you know, always discussing, you know, issues, and from their three different perspectives, you know, how they resolve things. But then also you have Antonio Valor when he feels he has to put on the costume, you know, which is also part of the comic book component. He's taking care of business that way. And so, you know, we first started out, we kind of went with the traditional villain style. It was a woman named the Seductress, and she had the costume. She had the title, the Seductress. But I think as we moved out of those two episodes, we started making the characters a lot more in the realm of the comic book, more believable of this is what person would do. You know, they don't need a costume. This is just a story about this person and what they're doing and how Brother Man intercedes. And since he doesn't have any superpowers and there's not a lot of gunplay in Big City, because people just don't use guns. So he has to use his wits, he has to use his muscle to handle all things. But the other people, they're doing the same thing. They're using their wit and they're using their muscle to try what they're doing. So that makes it for what I think a more interesting story. And I think people, our audience, they enjoy it being grounded like that versus, you know, if I need to get across town, I'm going to fly or run super fast. Here, I'm making my way across town to handle something. So that's part of the journey to do what he has to do.
Oh, okay. Now, Guy, you and Dawood did a book of Duke Denham recently.
Correct.
What inspired you guys to break Duke Denham off into his own series like that?
I think when we were getting ready to, we stopped at issue number 11, and then when we decided we were going to do the Brother Man graphic novel, I said, you know what, in between, let's do a flashback story using Duke Denham, because Duke Denham has, you know, a pretty interesting background. He started out as a police officer with BCPD, and then he became a private detective, and then after being a private detective, he becomes the district attorney for the city. And so these stories focus on when he's a private detective. He's in his prime, you know, with the strength and you know, the ladies are all on him. And so he's that, you know, but he's also, you know, an independent contractor. You know, he has his money problems. He's trying to resolve things, you know, one way, and sometimes he gets forced to handle it another way. And so these are more short novellas. They're individual stories. I have a goal of making 12 of the stories. Number 4 should be coming out within this next month. Happy to it's the Troublesome Troop. Takes place in the story centers around a circus. And so I also try to make the stories center out things that people are familiar with, and they can adapt to it. The story before this one was High Notes and Low Blows, and it's about a singer. The one before that Silver Roses. Just a family of florists, and the first one. Oh wow! Now I'm blanking.
Hold them close.
And it was about an insurance scam. So you know, I try to make the stories. They're enjoyable.
It's realistic as possible.
And you know, they have their action packed. And now and here's another way of learning more about Big City from a different time period and from a different perspective.
Okay. Now, when I was younger, I collected, you know, Brother Man comics, you know, at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. And you did bring up about issue 11. And I was going to ask you guys a question, you know, after, you know, issue 11, it seemed like you guys were on a layoff or something. You know, were you in the process of creating for what we're dealing with right now as far as our present day Brother Man and Duke Denim?
Yeah, oh, go ahead, guy. You can break it down.
No, go ahead. You got it.
Yeah, well, that actually was a time, you know, for us as a family, because really a lot of the success of Brother Man really took place within 5 years, within its first 5 years. A lot of the legacy work was done within the first 5 years when the entire family – when I say entire family, me, Guy, my brother Jason, who was doing the production management work, my mother was helping out, you know, in her spare time, and my father was our senior consultant in helping us out, you know, as like an advisor for us.
That's
kind of in the tradition of and for us that wasn't new. That was kind of in the tradition of our family coming up. We always did family things. My father always encouraged nation building starts with family. Family got to, you know, you got to build the family, hold the family together. So that's been, you know, that's something we always did growing up. You know, somebody working on a project, if I'm the artist, I draw it. If they need writing, Guy wrote it. So Brother Man was just kind of like the latest installment of years of the same. You know what I mean? So when number 10 came out, the day it came out, my mother died that day. And that was we were at the Javits Center in New York City. So that actually was a blow, because at that point we were at 750,000 books sold, like from 90 to 94, and it wasn't slowing down. It was picking up. We'd have hit a million. I believe we would have hit it that year.
Oh,
but what happened was all sales. Yeah. We had to stop selling at the Black Expo because she died on the first night out of a 4-day event, and that was the biggest event of the year. So we missed Chicago that year, L.A., all the big shows we missed, and then we lost money on New York. So then the following year, we opened up a world headquarters in Philly called Big City Comics World Headquarters, and that's when I was working on number 11. And this is, you know, during the time, you know, you're dealing with a parent passing, and then my father passed away. And so when he passed away, that was like a double blow. And so number 11 actually sat in a box for a year. And then I put it out with personal money because I had gotten a job in New York. It was like my first time ever working in a studio. A friend of mine said, "Hey, I got a job for you here in Manhattan." And I said, "Man, you know, I can't work on this like this." So we kind of all disbanded. But it wasn't like a disbanded where it's like, "Hey, I don't want to work together." It was just like, you know, it's just a natural, you know, Guy was already doing something on his own anyway with school, working in the schools and stuff. My brother Jason went out to the West Coast where he had went to school and whatever, you know, he was doing that anyway. And then I went to New York and everybody was just doing their own thing. So Brother Man kind of just went dormant. I always thought it was going to come back. I didn't know it would be 19 years. But within that time, I was gaining studio experience. I moved from the East Coast, from New York City to L.A., and that's when I gained experience on the Wild Thornberries and Rugrats as a character designer. And all that was new for me. I'd never had that experience. Brother Man was all on raw energy. That was not with any – that was from street tactics to self-publishing, and then I got studio professional experience. And then came to Atlanta at Turner Studios and eventually got nominated and won an Emmy Award So all those things were things that got added to it, added to the dimension of what we were doing, even though we weren't doing it at the time. So bringing Brother Man Revelation back, Revelation was supposed to have been Brother Man number 12 way back in 96. But over the years, the story expanded, and I remember guys saying, hey, if it's going to be a graphic novel, let's make it a graphic novel. Let's make this thing huge. And at that time, Brian was on the scene, and Brian was giving me a lot of input and advice on, hey, man, I'll help you make this thing happen. And I told Brian, it's a lot of work. And he said, I'm up for it. And he stayed the course. And me and him used to meet every day because we met at Cartoon Network. And we used to sit down at lunch. We used to sit down at lunch. And nobody introduced us. We kind of bumped into each other, and it was kind of just destiny. And we would sit down, and he wanted to know everything about Brother Man. And I was bringing in, like, all the original beats and all that stuff that me and my cousins used to make over the years. And he was just absorbing the universe. So it was a process that took years. So doing Revelation now, the reason why it clicks is because we've done a lot of grunt work and discussion and went through a lot of painful scenarios to get to this destination.
Right. Yeah, I'm hearing it. So, Brian, you was already familiar with the Brother Man, right?
Yeah, I was familiar with it, but I wasn't as familiar with it as I am now. I mean, over the years, all these conversations that I was talking about, it helped to create a cohesive universe in my mind. So, I mean, it's hard to explain because there are certain things that are specific to this world that people just assume and take for granted. I mean, I don't know if that explains it, but yeah, it's something that is even now, evolving and becoming more consolidated and consistent, and that's something that we endeavor to do to try to tell the story properly and make it a real place for people.
Yeah. Right. Now, I know, Dawoo, you mentioned the Black Expos or whatever, because I got started with dreadlocks myself doing the Black Expos. In particular, mm-hmm. it was the Missouri Black Expo, and I met a brother named Alfonso Washington, I think that was his name. He was doing Omega Man.
Original Man than Omega Man.
Original Man, right. That's it. And he gave me some good pointers back then. I really appreciated, what he told me. Just like, I had met you don't remember, I'm sure, back in 95, I think, or whatever, at the Million Man March, you were passing out postcards that you were drawing.
Oh, man, yeah,
of,
way
different
back.
Characters. Yeah, and we talked for a minute. I was surprised that you was able to talk because I thought you was a movie star, because I had Brother Man comics. I'm like, I'm here actually meeting a movie star here. But needless to say, we're all doing our thing now. But don't you miss the Black Expos?
We talk about that all the time because the great thing about the 90s that, like it's funny, there's like a give and take now. Like now we got internet, now everybody's well connected, yada, yada, blah, blah. Back then, we didn't have internet and all that. However, when Black Expo USA started in 89, because we were in East Orange, New Jersey at the time with our airbrush shop, and we went to Black Expo, and we said, and that was my first time seeing something like that where so many black people coming to just buy, and we said, y'all, we got to be here next year. And that's what kickstarted this whole project. And that sustained the growth of Brother Man over the years, and that's one of the things that helped. It's not guaranteed that you just go in there and you make that. You still have to do a lot of hustle, and there's other things involved. But I do tell people the Black Expo was key because not only did black people support and buy the comic books in great numbers, which I think was even greater than any comic book event that we did.
Right.
We also made connections at the Black Expo. Believe it or not, the way we got our books into Japan was through a brother at the Black Expo who had contacts in Japan. and he ordered books from his. So we picked up a lot of our book distributors at the Black Expo, although we also use Wizard Guide and things like that. But the comic industry was secondary to what our people were doing. The black bookstores were selling more books than comic bookstores. And that's what people didn't understand. Like, back then, we were breaking ground, and we were showing people, like, yo, man, use a barbershop down the street. We had brothers on the street who didn't even have stores who sold more than the stores.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because there was – and I think also the mentality, because think about that period, the music and all that stuff. It creates a certain mentality, and there's a certain aspiration where black people feel like they're rising up. And then you got a period where black people will start – you know, it's almost like crush – the confidence of black people through the music, make them feel like they're less than, and then you can see that vibe changing all the way around. And when a black person comes out with a product, black people ain't supporting them. They're not buying from them because it's not popular. It's not all. Back in the day, we bought stuff on the strength that it wasn't popular. Oh man, I like this because nobody has it, because nobody knows about it. That's what made hip hop cool. Hip hop, the cooler hip hop was the stuff that wasn't on the radio, the underground stuff. But now everything, there's a reconditioning of the mind to get people to follow what, almost like what industry says to buy. And then what that does is it siphons the money from your community to industry, because industry is looked upon as that's where you want to buy from. So even though we have internet and all this stuff, people get more likes on, hey, buy my product, than actual buying of the product. So a lot of people know about your product, but it may not necessarily be a lot of people are buying your product. And that's not for everybody. Some people, they know how to work it. You know, that's cool. But like you were saying, the Black Expo, the thing that's cool about that, you go there and you come home that day with the money.
It was guaranteed.
You see what I'm saying? And build the connections. Exactly. And you built the connections from other people. And there's just something good about being around people too that helps you when you come home. You just feel good. You feel like, oh man, we ready for the next one. We're ready, and now I want to do this in my book for the next one because I know people are going to buy the next book. I'm gonna hit them with this, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you 100% on that. And myself, even though we have the internet, we have our websites where people can order off, you know, the web page. They can also, you know, look you up on Facebook. You're doing major things on Facebook, just posting all the time, and people are seeing you on a consistent basis. I like the idea of having a venue that, you know, that we can go to, like the Black Expos, because of the fact that, like you said, even with the comic cons that we do, East Coast Black Age, Motor City Black Age, OnyxCon, we still don't get the people like a Black Expo was getting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is due to what you spoke on earlier as far as like the music industry and hip-hop or whatever has basically dumbed us down for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have to be really specific on how you target your audience, because I'm taking it your audience is – basically anybody of ethnicity, but you'll take any dollars for the most part, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, because that's basically how I am.
We were global since we came out, and that's another thing. You know,
because New York is a global city anyway, and that's the style of art you came with too.
And understanding our culture anyway, we've always been a global people. People have always enjoyed our culture. We were always the entertainers anyway. So our entertainment has always been loved by many. It's just a lot of times we didn't control it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And now with Facebook, and any other form of social media, we're able to reach back out to everyone worldwide because it's global.
Right.
They can actually see and know who you are, kind of know your mindset if you're putting a whole lot out there about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so and you get a lot of support that way as well. But I do want to throw you guys for a loop or whatever. I know we're talking about the underground versus mainstream or whatever. If you were to be given a position to work with the mainstream character, superhero, non-superhero, or anti-hero, which one would you want to change the story on, Guy? And you, that will, which one would you want to change the art style on?
Okay, it's funny you say that, because I was doing some traveling, so I had time to think about it, you know, because, well, first of all, I think you have to have a certain kind of mindset if you're working for that mainstream, and that's not a negative mindset. It's their genre is very specific, and their audience is looking for something specific. So I'll just get that out of the way. But and I didn't share this with Daoud yet because we hadn't talked. But I was thinking about Superman because you know people are doing a lot of okay, we're going to make Captain America black, and then but the story really doesn't change. It's just he's colorized, and you know you add some features, but it you know he's still in the same place and still doing the same thing. Like I was thinking, I said, you know what? If Krypton is this big planet, and then of course as you're about to see how deep the impression is of Superman, because I know all the characters' names and I don't even read the comic book. But you know, if I think it's Jor-El, you know, is this wise man scientist who puts his son in the ship to save his son. I said, he can't be the only smart guy on a whole planet. Right? So I said, what if there's another guy on the planet with skin like ours who, hey, I'm doing the same thing, you know, independent, but, you know, everybody knows the planet's going to be destroyed, so everybody's coming up with a plan of what are they going to do. What would happen if he sent his son and his son ended up on Earth? Do you get the same reception? And that's the thinking that I have. I said, does he get the same reception? Because, you know, he's flying around. He's got a lot of power. But do people receive him as, wow, he's our savior? Or do they look at him and say, no, he could be trouble? You know, kind of like, without a president. You know, without a president.
Probably look at us like we're trouble.
Our president's there. He can't get no respect. So for me, that would be a direction if, you know, if I just say, hey, that's the direction that I would go. And there was another one that I had was, if I took all those black characters, Black Panther, Luke Cage, Storm, you know, Misty Knight, and I said, what would happen if, you know, like Luke Cage had a house party and only they all came? What would they be talking about? You know, what would they be doing? When people say, Luke Cage, stop playing oldies, because that's what you'd be playing. But in my mind, that's how I saw it. I said, what if they all got together at Luke Cage's place? What would that be like?
What if they formed a team?
They're just getting together. You know, for me, culturally, that's what we do. We don't
always
reality
of it all.
And say, this is a team, and now we're going to call ourselves something. We're going to get together. We're going to vibe and talk about what it's like doing what we do, you know. But I get that from my family. My parents had people over all the time, and that's what they did. And you probably have people like that, too. They get together. They're talking about their job, what they don't like. You know, what they want to do better, and some people are having more of a good time than others. So, you know, that's the guy Sim's take on it.
Okay, now, Dawood, who would you change up?
Oh, man, I honestly can't even say I even think about it because I guess my mind doesn't really go in that direction. You know, and I've worked for, you know, major companies, you know, not comic book companies, but I worked on animated projects and things of that nature. And anytime I lend my skill to it, I fall into place and ask them what do they want, and I give them what they want. I never think in terms of All right, you know what? I'm going to bring this to this. You know, like when I work on Wild Thornberry, with the exception of there are some black characters on Wild Thornberries that are there because I was there. Because there were certain characters that we had to design and they had no race specifications. And since I was a character designer, I said, I'm going to make this a black girl and put her in the class with Debbie. And she made the cut and she's in the show. You see what I'm saying? So that was a decision
right.
that I made putting in there. But I don't think in terms of how I'm going to change these characters. I don't try to. I kind of like allow people to do, if this what their vision is, that's your vision. And I respect their vision. And for anything that I want to do, it really, I always feel like it really doesn't work until I'm doing it myself. I sometimes feel like my ideas don't work when I put it onto another's.
Well, I'm
concert.
Putting you into an imaginary world, okay?
Okay.
Bump what they want. This is what Dawood
mm-hmm.
wants. Which character would you change? I'm putting you into an imaginary world.
Oh, man. Imaginary world, I could do whatever I want.
Exactly.
I still don't even know. But you know what? Because like I said, I just don't. My head just doesn't go into that. I don't get excited. I don't go excited, and I can't even think of what I would do. But if you ask me for my thing, I'll be talking for days.
Yeah,
you
I understand. I understand. Brian, who would you change?
I understand exactly what Dawood is saying. It's very difficult after being in a certain mindset for so long to have to sort of juxtapose your own thoughts over on top of someone else's, like make the Hulk black or make Superman black. But if I had to, if I'm forced to, I would see. The thing is, back in the day, I was a big fan of Sword and Sorcery, about like Conan the Barbarian. I used to read the novels. And I am an avid fan of history and alternative history, as it were. I would like to see stories that talk about the Moorish presence in Europe and
right.
Americas, because it's documented. They were here long before Columbus. There's a book called...
Yeah, I would like to see that
They were here before Columbus, and it's like I was talking about Conan the Barbarian, the steel that the Vikings were getting, are actually the best quality steel, were coming from the Arabian Peninsula and Africa. That was the hardest steel because they had technology that they were using to make steel of top notch. They were using
this brother just went deep on us, but
yeah.
I'm listening.
So yeah, I'm talking about my imagination, but it's also there's a lot of factual stuff in there that I would like to see told in a story, in a fictitious story, just to get the information out because it's desperately needed to be told.
That's true. That's true. And let me ask, what does the future hold for Brother Man and Duke Denim, the whole team?
Go ahead. Oh, you go first.
Okay. Yeah. Well, right now, with the release of the graphic novel is our first major step towards the reintroduction of Brother Man to a whole new generation, and also letting the original fans know that we're back. Brother Man is the revelation. This is book one of a 3-part trilogy. So basically, even though this is 108 to 110 pages, it's still only part one. So basically, you're seeing the first third of a movie, and we illustrate it like a movie. The lighting, the theatrics, from the writing to the lighting to the drawing. We wanted this thing to feel epic, and so we want to go in deeper with that on book two and book three, which is already plotted out. We just got to draw it and execute it. And then from there, continue with where Big City was, what it set out to from the very beginning. We were never really about comic books. We're about intellectual property building. And Brother Man, it's coming out in the form of a comic book because that's the most cost-effective way to visually show your story. And then from there, then we move into animation, move into live action, move into 3D production, sculptures,
right.
Toys. And because the Big City universe is as broad and deep as, say, a Star Wars universe or a Marvel universe. It's just, you know, it's Brother Man is the big city as Mickey Mouse is the Disneyland. We're just getting the tip of the iceberg is getting polished. We're trying to get that out there so then people can see, oh, man, this thing runs deep. Because we have so many spinoff stories, and Duke Denim was just the first spinoff story that we said, well, let's get this one out, but let's make this a novel. So it's not the same as Brother Man, because now you got to use your vivid imagination and read the words, and all it's supported by is just the cover art. You know, I do the cover art, but when Guy sends me the story, I don't know what happens. So it's a treat when I get Duke Denim, because I don't know what's going to happen. But we have all these other stories that we're going to be breaking out and doing in different ways. Okay, this one can be a 3D animation. This can be this. This can be this. And, you know, right now it's just a matter of getting the funding. You know, if we had the funding, people would see this overnight. And right now, yeah, people can order at brothermancomics.com. We also have just got on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and Comixology, Amazon's digital download site. And we're expanding the distribution, too. There's going to be more sites. We're going to get on more distribution bases. You know, all this happened really since January. We just really started with Brother Man Revelation in January, and it's already, you know, rapidly moving.
So have you guys thought about getting on Peak Game Comics and Africom Comics as far as their digital download sites as well?
Yeah, actually, and there's another one too, brother I just spoke to down here, and, you know, everything's just processed, one thing at a time. Because we're handling a lot of things. That's why I have a manager now. My manager's been handling contacting people, and, you know, because I think for the longest time we were doing a lot of things on our own. And and now bringing the book out, we're rebuilding the whole distribution base. And when we did it back in the day, we had over 500 outlets that we dealt with independently. But that was built over for a 4-year period time. Now, you know, we've only been out for 2 months, and we've done this. But like I said, that's not the end all. That's just the beginning. Everything else just stacks on top of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. I know exactly what you mean by that. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, you know, we need a good 3 hours. You got your story is so, you know, relevant to what's going on, you know, with the new artists and new creators that are out here. You know, they can learn. I'm hoping that a lot of them will tune in and see if you have tuned in. But I hope that a lot more of them tune in on the downloads and listen to what you all have to say. Because, like you say, Dawood, about turning it into an intellectual property, that's very important, because now you're looking at merchandising and all that kind of stuff, more so than just what you say as far as a comic book is concerned.
Right.
But you do consider yourself the trailblazer for black comic book creators, right?
I think what it is that we understand, we know what we've done. We understand where we've gone and what we continue to do. And I do have to make that claim on certain things when I feel like I need to make it, but just out of a historical reference, but not as a ego trip. I don't ego trip. I just do things because it needs to be done. Yeah, yeah. But half the time, I usually have to say it anyway because other people say it, and I usually rather it come from there. I guess that's kind of how I've been. I kind of just do things, and what it's called is what it's called, but I'm doing it because it's got to be done. But I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that intro anyway.
You know, it is what it is, you know what I mean? I'll call it how it is. You know, I know you're being modest about it. You know, it's a couple of trailblazers we have out here that's doing their thing and been doing it for a long time. You know, we see a couple of them at the Black Ages. And, you know, hopefully this year you guys, I'm going to get with your manager, hopefully I can get you guys here in Detroit November the 12th for the Motor City Black Ages.
Man, that would be cool. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's our thing. If we can get, and it's for anybody out there who wants us to come somewhere, because sometimes people say, hey, come here, because it, you know, as if I, now I'm not going to say like I can't do things or what I can or can't do, but you know, we're still building. So
right.
I would like to be everywhere, but we need either need like an invite or somebody say, hey, we'll support or we'll offset
right.
or we'll do, you know. But I think sometimes people think it's just all on us, just be there. And it's like, hey, if we had it like that, we'd be at every last thing.
Every single
and,
one
and
of
we
them.
We would love to because, right, because I understand the value of everything that you do touches all these different people, and that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we just tell people to reach out to us and talk, and we'll figure out, you know, how to make things happen.
Okay, now I want you to let everyone know once again how to get access to Brother Man Comics and Duke Dental.
Okay, well, Brother Man Comics.
4 minutes left.
Okay, I'll pass on to you, Guy, and then Brian, you can let them know about you, too. So, Brother
okay.
Man Comics, you can go to the website, which is Brother Man Comics, comics.com, and you can order the books there. We have the original back issues, the trade paperbacks, and the 3-volume set, and we also have the new. All new graphic novel available there. You can also go on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Comixology, Comixology. And as we get onto the other networks, I'm gonna promote all those as we get in there. And then also Instagram is Brother Man Comics. You can follow us on there. That's Brother Man Comics with an X. And Guy. Oh, Guy, I can tell you where to get the Duke Denim.
Well, you know, you can get them through the Brother Man Comics store as well. You can get the digital downloads at least. Well, I'm doing a reprint of all the books, and then once they're out, we're just going to have people get them through the same location.
Okay.
Cool. What's going to be the next show that you guys hit? Are you going to do any shows this year?
Yeah, actually, we got quite a few on our schedule. You know, and actually, funny when you mentioned Black Expo, we found there are a few of them happening this year, and we're going to check a couple of them out, or try to.
You know about the southeastern United States? They have a lot of them.
There's
down
one
there.
In, I think, Charlotte. There's one in, I heard New York is going to have one, but I didn't get any information on it yet.
Okay.
There's a Black Comic Festival in St. Louis. I think you're familiar with that one, man. You should be up there. The New York
okay,
Comic Con
okay.
later on this year. Tim Field
so
invited us.
So you are going to do one mainstream Comic Con?
Yeah, we were invited up to be part of Afro Future Fest, which is
okay,
embedded
okay.
into the New York Comic Con through Tim Fielder. And,
right.
Yeah, we've never been against doing it. It's just when we were coming up, the Black Expos were just the choice that was just the most cost-effective in terms of
true.
What it yielded. You know, we would
yeah.
do that and then do a comic convention and be like, okay, that you know, that was kind of like secondary. But we
yeah,
still
yeah, it only makes sense
important.
To do the Black Expos mm-hmm. and things of that nature. It only makes sense to do that. Well,
mm-hmm.
guys, I appreciate you coming on the show this evening, and
well,
we're gonna
you.
Have
thanks
to set up. Me. We're gonna have to set up a part two to this, and we're gonna do a 2-hour interview, I think, next time.
All right.
Oh, that sounds good. We'll be ready
be
for
there.
You.
All right. Thanks again. Talk to you, brothers, lady. And good luck.
All right. Thank you. All right.
Thanks, brother.
All
right.
Yeah. This is yeah. This is yeah. This is yeah. 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 This is yeah. This is yeah. This is yeah. 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 Yeah.
Peace.